very welcome to World in Union, Balls at Ease weekly rugby show with me, Mick McCarthy, alongside Maurice Brosnan. Each week we do try to give you the outside perspective on Irish rugby and on the game itself. This week, delighted to say, we've got a great guest. We're talking to Shane O'Leary in just a few minutes. Shane is Irish former Munster man. I think he played for Young Munster, played for Connacht, you'll remember him. I think he played in the Pro 12 or 14, was it 12 or 14 when Connacht won it? Still 12, Pro 12, wasn't yeah. it? The Pro 12 final when they beat Leinster, that amazing year for Connacht. But he will be someone who's going to the World Cup in Japan next year, but not with Ireland, with Canada, the place where his mother's from. So we're going to talk to him about what it's like playing for Canada, how he got involved there, and everything that goes along with playing for a smaller country like Canada when you're from Ireland. So a great story there. Maurice, we'll get to that in a minute, but quieter week, I think, than we've been used to in the previous 3 weeks of this show coming off the November Internationals. But interesting nonetheless, like, we had four Irish wins out of four in the Pro 14. 14, not 12. And, you know, Connacht won in South Africa. Ulster got a good win at home to the Blues. Huge wins for Munster over Edinburgh, and especially for Leinster at the Dragons. 49-point win. Like, absolutely unbelievable.
Yeah, like a second string Leinster. Yeah. So Dragons had with seven Welsh internationals back in their panel. I mean, it's not going well there. They sacked their defence coach last month, which is kind of concerning.
Yeah.
I think, obviously, from Bernard Jackson's perspective, like, he missed the recruitment window last year. Then they brought in 15 players, and I suppose now it's about getting them integrated and also getting a new coaching panel. And then on top of that, he's now become more hands-on because, yeah, as we just mentioned, his defence coach is gone. So that's a really challenging position right now.
Yeah, that's real pressure, because you get to the stage where no matter what's working against you, that's too big a defeat at home to, as you said, not even close to Leinster's first team. And, you know, Leinster obviously a bigger fish to fry next weekend, but for the Dragons, that's bottom of the table and not looking good at all. And it's interesting we're talking about Jackman, because later on you want to do something very interesting where we talk about the coaches, the Irish coaches who we want to look out for in 2019. We're entering Joe Schmidt endgame. We've got Andy Farrell coming up. We need that next successor, and next year is a very big year for that. And it's funny that on the same day we look at it, we see what happened to the Dragons at the weekend, with Bernard Jackman as one of the great hopes of Irish coaching going back the last 5 or 6 years. And somebody else then, also looking at the results from the weekend, the Leicester Tigers, one of the biggest clubs in the world under Irish international Jordan Murphy, beaten by 30 points to Bristol. Like, really horrendous stuff there. Yeah. They're in big trouble. I was looking at the Premiership table. Like, I mean, they're in a dogfight of about six teams at the bottom there, but their points difference, minus 78, by far the worst of the whole Premiership. Like, getting absolute hammerings.
I suppose that was where you'd really kind of look, especially at this game, you'd be concerned. Like, so what happened in that game, Conn Eastman got an early red card after 20 minutes for a high tackle on Madigan, and it had a massive bearing on the game. Subsequently, they had this record league defeat. But I think even if you just look at Gordon Murphy's quotes after the game, like, he said, "Mate, no one is more embarrassed than I am. Absolutely appalling performance. We are devastated. I am devastated. It's one of those things where we probably won't sleep until next Friday. I've asked the boys not to do any media." It's kind of apparent that it's entering crisis mode.
Yeah,
that
there's a serious issue there. Yeah.
But on the other hand, then you've got somebody like Pat Lamb, who has brought the exact same template from Connacht to Bristol. Like, I saw Paul Williams, the rugby journalist, talking about... Not the crime reporter. Talking about, I think they had over 800 metres carried. So it's very all ball in hand and stuff. Like, that's an obscene level of stats. You would expect it to be about 500 or less.
Yeah.
So to see that kind of template being brought, and, you know, you've got John Muldoon coached Pack with Ali O'Downey, who's also from Connacht as well. Like, that real kind of emphasis coming through Bristol. Like, what you mentioned there is the dogfight, what English Premiership is the real kind of takeaway. Like, between Bath in 6th and Newcastle, who are in 12th, there's 4 points.
It's
unbelievable kind of dogfight world. So you talk about Leinster and Munster playing kind of understring teams on Friday and Saturday ahead of this week. They kind of don't have that luxury, and if they do, they just get beat.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's... absolutely, and you know, that is one of the things that, that obviously has been an issue for French and English clubs going back years, and they've, you know, they've changed the entire structure of the European competition to try and fix it. But, you know, I think the problem is that Leinster and Munster to an extent, and there's a couple of other teams in the Pro 14 like that that just have too much strength and depth for, you know, it to matter how important the league is, because they can just, Leinster can go out with a close to third team and win by 49 points. Like, and say, again, just that, that number is just incredible. But
yeah, and I suppose if you were to look at that from a, like, you got two Irish coaches there, both former teammates in Leo Cullen and Bernard Jackman, kind of a similar age profile, and whatever about expectations of, you know, like, we'd have a lot higher expectations for Leinster than we do for Dragons, but you would expect Dragons to maximise their potential, which they aren't doing right now. I think that would be self-admitted. And you would expand in that level of standard or expectation across the board. Like, that's where the Pro 14 needs to get.
Yeah. I have to say, I was watching the game, and you turn it on kind of expecting Leinster to do that. You know, it's like you're used to that being something similar, you know, but maybe not as extreme, but in a Leinster Dragons game, it's going to be something similar. But you turn it on and you see some of the Welsh faces there. As you said, they brought seven internationals back into the team. Very familiar faces to us against this kind of young Leinster team with some names that we're kind of possibly excited about, but don't know yet. And we're looking at them sort of seeing what they're all about. And you kind of change and you change what you're thinking about, and you go, Jesus, like, this is a tough enough test. Like, this should be a dogged old club team that they're playing here. You know, these aren't, you know, complete rubes, and that's how they played. You know, Leinster, again, just ran over them, did whatever they wanted in the whole game, you know. So, look, that is an issue. It's an issue for Jackman, I think, no matter what is working against them as the Dragons, as very much the fourth team in Wales, and I think that it's not an easy position. It's similar enough to being Connacht coach here, I think, you know. That said, you would like them to play at or above their level, and I don't think they're doing that at the moment, so that's a lot of trouble. And Jordan Murphy definitely in a bit of trouble at Leicester, because Leicester's too big a team to be being beaten by 30 points to a team like Bristol. But just on Bristol, you did mention him there in passing and how Pat Lam's teams are doing. Ian Madigan absolutely tearing it up about half for them.
Yeah, and
it's great to see.
It's unbelievably great to see, because I think sometimes we kind of frame Irish players abroad in that, what will they do for the Irish as a country, for Joe Smith's Ireland, when they come back? And sometimes it's kind of nice to see. I was sitting at home on Saturday evening, just I flicked on Sky Sports and saw, like, Duncan Casey coming on after 50 minutes for Grenoble, and Duncan Casey was fourth choice at Munster, horrendous injury profile, and is now kind of living it up in France. And it's got whatever about, like, just from a sheer kind of rugby perspective, not necessarily, it doesn't always have to be framed by Irish rugby, just to see these players go abroad and actually make something of it. Like, have the stones to go and risk something. I mean,
change their life around to try and,
like,
get.
You mentioned Madigan. Madigan moved to a championship team. Madigan dropped down a division. Like, he kind of bought into something and is now playing this incredible rugby under Pat Lam, a lot of ball and hand stuff. He only missed, he was flawless off the tee, and he only missed one, which was, it was way out in the touchline. I don't think he was
in a huge win, like, so lots of kicks.
There is something kind of encouraging just to see Irish rugby players abroad and actually making something of it without it necessarily having to frame it as in what happens when they return.
Yeah, it's so true, because just to change sports even for a minute, when I watch football, you know, you'll be always watching, like, almost an obsession with watching English football through the, like, how's Shane Long doing? Why is he not in the Southampton team? And, you know, and you're basically watching one person when you're watching a game, but it's all because of how they'll do. Are they getting their Premier League minutes so they could go and play for Ireland? But it's funny when you see somebody like Glenn Whelan or Wes Houlihan or something, if you're watching games that aren't playing for Ireland anymore, you still find yourself in the set. You know, you have to remind yourself almost, like, I just want this guy to do well.
Yeah,
it's nothing
exactly,
to do with
me
or Ireland. I just, like, you know, it's an Irish guy doing well over in England. It doesn't necessarily have to mean. And it's the exact same at rugby. It's the exact same at watching Zeebo, I think, for Racing or something. You just want him to do well.
Yeah.
And I think, and definitely with Madigan, I think a lot of Irish people will feel that about Madigan. He's somebody that, you know, became a star in the World Cup 3 years ago, and it didn't quite work out in Leinster, and people were kind of disappointed by it. And then, you know, you go to the English Championship, as you said, you disappear. Yeah. And Ian Madigan is borderline forgotten about. So to see him go and tear it up against a big team like Leicester, a team that, like, you know, a game that's going to make some waves, and him to kind of be the star turn there, people will be delighted to see that. And I think we'll keep an eye on how Ian gets on over the course of the year. But
I mean, I guess Like, when you look at a guy like Madigan, like Madigan, so he gets a massive hit and he picks himself up after 20 minutes and kind of tries like that. But this stuff is cyclical. Like, ideally, if Madigan is in bed there, he ultimately becomes a coach and then he's an Irish coach abroad. And then that all of a sudden becomes beneficial for Irish rugby in itself as well.
Yeah.
Like, this stuff is, there's a bigger picture beyond just why can't we get Simon Zeebo and Duncan Ryan back into the Irish squad?
I definitely see where you're coming from. I think people will look at mid-20s Ian Madigan and say, though, it's a bit early to be thinking about coaching. And, there will be a slot open. There will be a slot open in a couple of years. Johnny will like to think that it'll be further down the line. I think he thinks he's Tom Brady, and he may well be. But in a couple of years, there will be a slot. And look, we don't know who's coming. And we know that Ross Byrne is there, and we know that Joey Carberry is technically supposed to be coming back in a year and a half, and we know that Ian Madigan is always somebody they can look at. So, like, Leinster will be thinking about their succession plans in the same way as I think the IRFU will be for their coaches, you know. But, look, Ian Madigan, as I said, is somebody that we'll definitely keep an eye on, and it'll be interesting to see as he goes, because somebody, regardless of his place in Irish rugby, I think is somebody that we want to do well and we'll be looking out for. He won't be going to the World Cup though, because Irish coach Joe Schmidt, the Irish coach, don't select players who don't play outside Ireland. One Irish man who will be going to the World Cup though, but not for Ireland, is Shane O'Leary, who is Nottingham's out half. And I'm delighted to say we're going to talk to him now. Shane, thanks so much for joining us. You'll be going to Japan as a member of the Canadian team. How did that come about?
So when I didn't make Irish 20s back in 2013, I think, I inquired about playing with the Canadian 20s, as my mum was born in New Brunswick, in Canada. So I emailed the coach at the time, called Mike Shelley, who's an Englishman, and he brought me over and got stuck in, and we went down to the World Trophy. We actually finished second to Italy that year, which was pretty cool. And then after that, I moved to Grenoble. I signed an academy deal over there, so I was there for one season. And then I came back to Connacht and I was there for three. So at my time, when my time in Connacht had finished, I was looking for a new club, and I decided I may as well try and crack on with the international scene, as the coach Mark Anscombe at the time was keen to get me over. So I went over then and played, and 10 caps now, and loving every one of them.
Yeah, it's a class story, to be honest. And did you have your mother, as I was born in New Brunswick, was it a connection that, were you over to Canada much as a kid or anything like that?
I didn't go to Canada till I was about 12, I think, but then we went twice in 3 years. There's seven of us at home, so five kids. So as you can imagine, that's a pretty expensive trip for my parents. So we went over, I think my granny came with us then as well. So we went over to meet my great-grandfather, who passed a few years ago, but he was 96 at the time, I think, so he was of a good age. So our mum wanted us to meet him, so we went over twice in 3 years to see him, and then obviously I've been back a handful of times in the last kind of year and a half, 2 years now, for a couple of tours and stuff. So yeah, no, it's been good. It's a pretty cool country, I think. You can probably tell that by the amount of people that are moving there from Ireland at the moment. It's kind of like Australia 2.0 for people moving, looking to looking to get work and restart their lives, I suppose. But yeah, no, it's pretty cool country. They're quite similar to Irish people, and they're quite kind, and enjoy a few beers as well and stuff. So I've really enjoyed it since I've gone over.
I have to say, it sounds great, because there is, like, obviously an Irish tradition of the opposite happening, of, you know, the diaspora kind of being brought back by sport and being able to do that. And I have to say, it's a nice thing that you get to kind of explore your Canadian side and your Canadian heritage through sport as well, kind of working the opposite of what we're kind of used to over here.
It's definitely cool for sure. And like, there's plenty of boys that are doing it as well. Like, in two of my first bowl games, I was playing against AJ McGinty, who was playing at Temple States. And the last time I played against the States, I think they had four lads with Irish heritage playing. So like, it's funny out there, sometimes you're listening to accents and it nearly feels like you're playing a club game at home, as opposed to playing an international match in Halifax in Nova Scotia. So, it's definitely been good. It's been a great opportunity for me as well. Last year I managed to get another contract with Ealing off some of my performances in the summer tour. And then obviously I'm in Nottingham this season. So, it definitely stands well. And I think sometimes I get a bit of slagging, you know, about it maybe being a tier two nation, but I think a lot of the clubs rate it quite highly, and that international exposure obviously brings some huge experience into your club games when you're playing against some awesome teams. Like last November, we played against the Maori All Blacks. Unfortunately, I missed it through injury. But then last summer, we played against Scotland, and you're playing against all these guys who play every week in the Six Nations against Ireland and France and stuff. So so it's been a great experience, and I'm really enjoying it.
Shane, you must have been speaking of exposure, you must have been delighted to see the game get some exposure back here in the Irish press with talk about why the Germany Canada game was one of the most important, not the Ireland New Zealand game.
Can you say that again?
You must have been happy to see the exposure your World Cup qualifier got in some parts of the Irish press.
Yeah, it was funny. All right, I saw it the morning, and then my Twitter was exploding. People the left, right, and centre on it. I had to agree with him. I did think it was the most important game. We did manage to qualify for the World Cup, which is pretty cool. But obviously, there was another massive game on that evening, and we all watched it back in the hotel after, and it was I think it was a pretty special night in Irish sport, and obviously Ireland pulled out a phenomenal result. I think it was the first time since 1995 that a Northern Hemisphere team hadn't conceded a try against the All Blacks, or I think I read a stat like that somewhere, which is it's pretty phenomenal. It was an awesome game. I really enjoyed it.
And like, when you look, we've got this obsession kind of in Irish rugby with the school system and that kind of producing players, but you'd be more so a product of the AAL system. Like, would you have said that kind of is standing to you now?
So I remember when I was, I think I must have been 16 or something, and I had a couple of rugby schools looking for me to come in, but it just didn't suit with the curriculum. Kind of going from my leaving cert, and I'd done half the course with my school, and they'd already done the other side of it, so I was moving in. I wouldn't have been leaving school for a few more years, I'd say. So I decided to stay in St. Anne's Community College, so played club the whole way up, played Munster Youths, Munster 19s, 20s, and then obviously headed away with Canada. But I would have played a couple of years AIL with the Cookies, and then I would have made a couple of appearances for Wegians and Bucks as well as I was moving around the Connacht clubs when I was trying to, I suppose play more locally for the province that I was at. I rate the AIL quite highly. I think it's great, like the rugby scene pod and stuff, or the club scene pod, sorry, that's been going on. It's kind of building that exposure for it. I think it's got a good reaction. I definitely rate it quite high. There's a lot of lads in the league that would be more than well able to step up to professional rugby, I think. And you see it every year. There's always a couple of boys that make that step up, like Neely Cronin and that last year. It's been really impressive. So I definitely rate the league very highly, yeah.
Going to Grenoble then, as a, under 20, was it just an interesting decision by yourself as well? I think it takes a bit of guts to kind of go and try and pursue a career in France like that. But there was a kind of an interesting Irish connection at Grenoble at the time. It was an interesting place to spend a couple of years, I'd say, was it?
Yeah, it was awesome. So I was actually only there for one season. But when I got back from Canada 20s, I just headed back into the Cookies and started playing with them again. And I didn't get any academy contract at home, so I was always going to play professional rugby in my own head, so it didn't matter where I had to go. Mike Prendergast ended up signing for Grenoble, and Bernard Jackman was there as well, along with Andrew Farley, who would have played with Ireland and captained Connacht. And James Hart was there as well, who's obviously with Munster now. When I managed to get out there, it was very tough at the start. Kind of, it was my first time living away from home. I think it was 19, and all of a sudden I can't speak to anyone. And my two best friends were a Tongan fella and a Polish fella, and they were only learning English, so I was teaching them English and then trying to learn French and trying to teach them French as well, which I did in school, but probably didn't listen too well in school. I didn't think I'd have to use it. The year over there, then after 3 months, you start being able to understand a bit more. And after 6 months, I was able to speak a little bit. And then when I came home after 11 months, I was able to go to the bank on my own and do those little tasks that you take for granted back here. But when you can do it in a different language, it feels like a bit more of an achievement. I really enjoyed it. I played mostly in the centre when I was out there. It was quite hard to play at 10 when you're trying to learn to speak the language, never mind trying to tell people what to do and drive a team around the field. It was a great year. I really enjoyed it. I think it helped me grow a lot as a person off the field as well. Kind of, like I said, my first time living away from home and kind of getting that bit of independence. And then obviously it being quite difficult with the language barrier, but then feeling like I was a stronger person when I got home. And then obviously got to play with Connor for 3 years, and we had some pretty pretty big moments in those 3 years as well. So that was all great.
Great, yeah, no, it was brilliant. And when you did come to Connacht, actually, you just happened to be at a pretty remarkable time in their history. I know we were, myself and Morris were talking earlier about the Pro 12 final in 2016 that you played a part in over in Scotland. That's just a remarkable time to be swept up and to be a part of the Connacht squad that year.
Yeah, it was pretty surreal. So I didn't get too many minutes at the start of the year, but then there was a couple of injuries and I managed to get, I think it was 5 starts in a row. Kind of held my own pretty well, did well, and then the boys came back from injury and I managed to hold on to a place on the bench with my USA counterpart AJ McGinty. He was the starting 10 in the final and stuff. Yeah. It was like a surreal year. It just almost felt like we couldn't lose at times, like, you know, no matter what, we were kind of grinding out results, and obviously there were some huge performances from some of the standout players and stuff, but I think a lot of boys in the squad obviously put in quite a shift, and then I was lucky enough to be involved in the semi-final and the final against Glasgow and Leinster, which is probably it's up there with one of the highlights of my career. Today I got my cameo 4 minutes on the wing, I think, in that game, but I would have played a fucking tight head if he wanted me to come on and play. So, it was a pretty special day, and I just remember kind of one of the biggest parts of the day for me was when we arrived at the ground and the Fields Baton Rye were ringing around the stadium, and we're walking into the bus, and then I didn't even know there was that many Connacht supporters in the world, but it felt like there was 100,000 of them there. Like, it was absolutely incredible. So Connacht have a great fan base, I think, and sports ground is always lifting off the clan stand and stuff. So that day was, I remember that day for the rest of my life, for sure.
It's funny because I remember I was at the sports ground when the 7-6 game against Leinster, and there just felt like there was such a kind of this was Connacht's year mentality, but, you know, to grind out or somehow win. But when the final came around, you actually just went out and beat them. It was like it wasn't luck or it wasn't faith or anything like that. You just hammered them in a game of rugby. It was just this brilliant performance. It was like, I don't know, I wonder, did you guys just have this sense of, this is our time, we're going to take this opportunity with both hands?
I think so. Like, obviously we played a very attacking style game where we were pretty much running from everywhere. Almost probably looked at times like we had a no kick policy. But yeah, I think the boys were pretty confident. I think we beat Glasgow back to back, and if you're beating Glasgow back to back, you must be doing something right. They're obviously a brilliant team as well. But yeah, there's just that sense of confidence and kind of we had no fear, I think, which it kind of showed in the game. I think we were 20 points up at one stage or close to that. There were some huge performances from some of the lads. So yeah, it was pretty impressive.
Talk to us a little bit about kind of Canadian rugby, that you've obviously been involved there in one way or another now for going back kind of 5-6 years, and obviously started playing with the international team last year. What's rugby like in Canada, if that's not too kind of wide-ranging and basic a question? Is it a growing sport? Is it on the radar in on national media? Is it something that is severely underfunded, you know, all those kind of things? Is it is rugby on the radar at all in Canada?
No, it's definitely an up-and-coming sport, and I think the more people we meet out and about now when we're out there, and we try and get out in the community a bit and do a bit of coaching and stuff like that when we're out there as well, but it's definitely growing. I meet more and more people that know rugby now, and more people know the rules, and I think the playing base is getting better and better. We've obviously gone through a bit of a transitional period where we've struggled to get a couple of wins, but I think we've won our last 4 test matches now. Obviously qualified for the World Cup 2 weeks ago. I definitely think it's definitely up and coming, and it's growing it all the time. There's more kids playing all the time, and I think the players are getting better all the time, especially with the MLR having started now, and the Toronto Arrows have a new team in. So, yeah, we're getting better and better all the time, and I think the sport's definitely growing. It's definitely up and coming. And also, I suppose the background to rugby, where it's very inclusive, I think the Canadians really like that as well, which kind of makes it an easy sport to pick up, you know, especially in they all like a bit of aggression and from sports like that over in North America, with the likes of American football and Canadian football and ice hockey and stuff. So I definitely think it's a sport that the public are like, and our last 3 games were all televised on TSN as well. So it's definitely up and coming. It's definitely growing, and I think it's just going to go from strength to strength now and get better and better out there.
Shane, you mentioned this kind of culture that you played in at Connacht, and I'm kind of curious, like, was there any learnings from that underdog success that you could take forward with Canada?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest ones is just kind of, you got to back yourself. Even when you're not playing well, sometimes your confidence can carry you through, which would be a big thing for me. I kind of, if I missed a couple of kicks in a row or if I'm not playing particularly well, I kind of try and think back to, well, I know I can do it. I've done it all week in training and I've done it before in games. Like, it's water off the duck's back kind of thing. Like, you know, you just kind of got to drop it and get on with it. It's kind of just believing in yourself, kind of like in that respect. Mostly the biggest one for me is just having confidence, just backing yourself, not shying away from it, wanting to step up and trying to deliver for the team you're currently playing with.
You mentioned, Morris talked about underdog mentality. I think when the World Cup does come around next year, I suppose when you're a team like Canada, you want to play the best teams you can possibly play. But, God, you got a bit of a dog of a group, New Zealand and South Africa, just for starters. I don't know, though. It must be exciting to have that kind of, to staring that down the barrel for next year.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Obviously, it's a pretty difficult group. But these are just what you play for. Like, you want to play against the best players in the world. I want to hopefully start at 10 and line up against Beauden Barrett. That's what I want to do. Like, I want Sonny Bill to run at me a couple of times and
target your channel.
It's what you play for. And as a kid, I always would have dreamt about going to World Cup and maybe have taken a bit of an alternative route, but hopefully I will be on the plane when it travels. And I'm absolutely just looking forward to it. I can't wait to get out there and hopefully give it a bash.
Yeah. Oh, no, we can't wait for it either. It's gonna be some experience, as you said, taking on New Zealand, South Africa, all that. I suppose the realistic aim, though, will be to target the Namibia game as the one to win and then experience the rest of them. Without kind of dismissing chances, I'm saying that will be a success of a World Cup if you can go and give Namibia a game and possibly sneak a win there.
Yeah, well, obviously, I think we're going to, with every team, you always go out and you aim to win every game. Obviously, some of the teams in our group are best teams in the world, but at the same time, so is anything happening on any given day? Yeah. You said with my underdog mentality, Connacht won the Pro 12 in the 2016 season or 2015 season, and we'd never been to semi-final before, so it's all uncharted territory. I think a couple of the boys have played against New Zealand before in the last World Cup, but then again, aren't the one before it. But yeah, look, we're going to go out and we're going to try and make sure we look after our performance, and then hopefully the results will come our way as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely fair enough. Before we let you go, Shane, you're playing your club rugby in Nottingham at the moment, as you mentioned. How's that going for you? Is that something that you're kind of enjoying, that level in England?
Yeah, no, I'm absolutely, I'm really enjoying my time in Nottingham. I think there's kind of a real family feel to the club out here. I think all the boys get on quite well and kind of look after each other. And then we're playing quite an expansive game as well. I think we're fourth in the league at the moment. We're tied for it with two other teams on points difference or whatever. But we beat Ealing, who I would have played with last year in our last league game a couple of weeks back. So that was obviously a bit of a special one for me. We're playing a good brand of rugby. We're throwing the ball around a lot. I'm having fun. We're doing well as a team. I think I'm playing quite well individually. So, yeah, no, I'm definitely enjoying it. And it's a good club, yeah.
Well, listen, you'll be Nottingham will be a team we'll be looking out for, and definitely come the World Cup and come all the games between now and the World Cup, Canada will be certainly a team we'll be looking out for, and we look forward to seeing you wearing the number 10 jersey again. Thanks so much for joining us today, Shane.
No problem, lads. Thanks for having me.
Great stuff there, Shane. Yeah, that's a great story, isn't it? Definitely, really, yeah. I'll be watching for over the next few months anyway.
It's a perfect caveat to what we were talking about earlier, which was the idea of an Irish guy going and forging his way without, and outside this context of what happens with the national team, just doing it his own way and driving, as it looks like.
Yeah. And, like, you know, maybe if he injures an All Black or two in the World Cup, or maybe a South African before Ireland might get past the quarterfinal with thanks to another Irishman. So you never know. But definitely something we'll keep an eye on as the year goes on. Shane O'Leary is his name again, if you want to look him up and find out a little bit more about him. Now, Morris, we'll look ahead to the return of the Heineken Champions Cup next weekend by looking at the opponents for the Irish team and how they've been getting on in a couple of minutes. But as we did mention earlier, we do want to talk about some Irish coaches who you want to have a big 2019, because we are now, we've got Andy Farrell, who's going to be replacing Joe Schmidt, but who's going to be replacing Andy Farrell? Who are the IRFU going to bring in under Farrell? How's that next succession plan going? And you wanted to talk about a few of the guys, both here and abroad, who might have a say in that.
Yeah, and I guess, I mean, I kind of think maybe last week, probably fairly, Andy Farrell kind of got lost in the water because it was such a celebration of what Schmidt has done and kind of a bit of a mourning that he's going to move on. But it's just like it is worth saying that Andy Farrell is a phenomenal appointment and he's highly regarded. It's kind of interesting to see this idea that he's been shoehorned as just a defence coach because of his rugby league background. But his first job at Saracens was actually as a skills coach. So he's got experience in that regard in the past. It's funny, just in researching for this, I found a questionnaire from The Independent in 1999 and he spoke about Bill Landeman, who he said had the biggest influence on his career, who's a fitness coach, like totally away from that. In the same interview, he also got a phone call mid-thing from an 8-year-old Owen Farrell telling him that he wanted to start playing rugby. So, but in terms of the succession plan, something has to happen beyond Farrell replacing Schmidt, because we're also going to lose Greg Feek, who's currently double jamming at Japan, and after World Cup, he moves to Japan full-time. That means you need a scrum coach. You also need a coach to take over the backs coach. It doesn't have to be a like-for-like replacement. I think we had this, there was a presumption in a lot of places that it was just going to be Stuart Lancaster would become Farrell's de facto number two. We don't know if that's...
And even if it is, Leinster will need to bring someone in, and it's all part of the same tent, really, you know. And
it's speculation about a guy who's travelling over. We're going to speak about Bath later. Bath need a head coach. That's a lot closer to the home for Lancaster than Dublin or Leinster or Ireland are. You know, there's a whole host of things that could happen in the next 12 months that would mean that this Lancaster idea might not pan out the way it is. This is all speculation. So I guess what we're going to talk about today are Irish coaches who can actually help. I suppose what we're talking about is it's really, really hard for the IRFU to develop coaches in the same way they develop players, because you lose them from your catchment area very, very easily. So you got a guy like Paul O'Connell, who they tried to streamline from Munster to the Ireland under-20s, but then suddenly he deviates and he's going to South Francais. Now he'll build up a CV there and hopefully come back and use that in Ireland. But that's outside of your control. You can't necessarily, plan for that or account for that.
Yeah.
So in that regard, I suppose we could start talking
about... You're looking at kind of five guys. You're sort of dividing it up loosely enough on backs and forwards, bearing in mind that all these guys are probably flexible in how they're doing it. But the backs first, you're looking at Nigel Carlin, I think, no surprise, and Ron Nogara, who's on his way back down to New Zealand at the moment, and I'm not sure is an urgent replacement, at least in Irish rugby.
So just on Nigel Carlin, by the way, like Nigel Carlin, I think probably deserves a lot more credit, or certainly kind of, I think he's definitely in this discussion. The reason he's in that discussion is because he was over the under-20s, that incredible under-20s which developed Andrew Porter and Jordan Armour and James Ryan. He subsequently come back to Connacht, where he started out. The Connacht, like players like Gulten Delan, have spoken really highly of him in terms of his eating with them. But he's a backs coach, and you can see when you see Connacht against the Cheetahs at the weekend, and this really clever move off a lineout where you've got Tom Farrell, who's been in sensational form for them, hitting up as first receiver and ends up scoring a try from 50 meters. That's planned. Like, that's a coordinated move. There's a coach behind the scenes who's drilling that in, and so the evidence is quite strong for a guy like Nigel Carlin, who's got a really good age profile for this role. For anyone who read the Sunday papers yesterday, I know like Peter Riley was suggesting in the Sunday Times that it needs to be, what Ireland needs to do next is appoint an experienced head. I mean, I don't necessarily agree with that. I think you look at a coaching setup like South Africa's, and they've got Jack Ninebar and Alan Waters and Razzy Erasmus, and all guys kind of young, in their 40s, encouraging coaches. I don't think the age profile is actually that relevant, to be honest. I think it's the figure itself. I don't think you need a guy to oversee or these.
Yeah, it depends on the personality.
Precisely.
And I think that's a fair point in this regard, that we don't need somebody older necessarily.
Ron O'Gara has spoken quite openly about the idea that he would be open to discussing this role with Irish Rugby. I think he'd be a phenomenal...
Certainly eventually, anyway.
Yeah. Down the line. I mean, I think it should be a kind of priority to get the likes of O'Gara and O'Connell back into an Irish setup. Not because they're Munster legends or not because of what they've done as players, but because of the renowned experience. Like, they're building up incredible CVs, and if we're not benefiting from that, somebody else will.
Yeah, now actually this is interesting because we can put O'Connell in here as well, because obviously he's in one of your five and in the forwards bracket, and he's in SAD and Rogers at Crusaders. And there's a part of me that disagrees with you here in that I think Ron O'Gara, Paul O'Connell are always going to have a magnet bringing them back to Ireland at some stage in their life. They're both, not only are they obviously family here, they're from here, everything like that, but they're also like giants of the game here, and they have contributed so much as players to Irish rugby that I think if they have something to contribute as coaches, that they will want to naturally bring that expertise to Ireland as well. In the meantime, I think it's an amazing thing that they're going around.
Yeah.
Like, the fact that Ron O'Gara is so heavily involved in the Super Rugby Champions is, I think, one of the most phenomenal and under-talked about things that's happened in Irish sport. That this, like, this guy who was such a legend of a player went and got these reps under his belt at Racing. That was cool enough on its own. But then to go and say, do you know what, I'm going outside of Europe and I'm going to go and do this in New Zealand, and to be basically second in command of a team that won Super Rugby at this stage of his coaching career is absolutely amazing. And there's hardly anybody... And the reason we keep getting Southern Hemisphere coaches is because European coaches don't know how, don't travel the way Southern Hemisphere coaches do.
Yeah.
And don't know that, you know, and don't know the games at all levels and don't have experience in New Zealand, in Australia, in France, in England, in Ireland. And Rodgers is setting out in that path, and I think it's going to benefit him so much. And I get what you're saying about his experience being wasted if it's not eventually going to come back to Ireland. Again, from the IRFU's, going back to our conversation earlier, like, that's, you know, we're talking specifically from the IRFU's point of view here. But I feel like that option is always going to be there in the future.
Yeah.
Maybe not right now, but in the meantime, God, like, I mean, this guy could be a head coach in New Zealand.
Yeah.
Very soon.
And I would kind of love to see that happen, to be honest. But I also think that from Andy Farris' perspective, from an IRFG perspective, you should try and create the best coaching ticket you can. And if Ron O'Gara is interested in being a part of that, or if
do you not think that the best coaching ticket available might include Rog now, but could in 5 years' time, when he's still a young man, be a much better coaching ticket because of the experience he'll gain in the meantime, so that the IRFU should look at a very long-term option in that we have Andy Farrell, we have him for however long we have him, he's on the back of Joe Schmidt expertise, he's worked with Joe Schmidt, we're going to get a solid number two, of which there are good options there, and with succession plan, and we leave Rog to do his thing, to find his experience, we leave O'Connell to go and do the same thing, and eventually these guys, if they're good enough, if they're what we think they're going to be, are going to come back with the ideas, with the whole world at their feet, knowing rugby in all over the world inside out, and come back and be the best possible Irish coaches they can be.
I think from an Irish perspective, like, I totally understand what you're saying, but I think from an Irish perspective, your priority is to have Ireland as strong as they are for as long as they can be, and if that means that you've got a guy like O'Gara who comes in and deputises with Farrell with the view of a long-term succession plan of him ultimately becoming the Irish coach, I think that's just as strong a position to be in as it would be to have this guy developing in his roster and his, you know, his array of skills abroad as well.
No, I get you. I suppose my point, I think, is that we have another level of good coaches that we can get to before them.
Yeah.
And that they will do, and at the moment, what I would say is, and again, this is guessing and it's really hard to project how somebody will do in a job, but judging by what I know at the moment, that they would do an equally good job right now, but in 5 years, maybe
it could be
with
better,
more experience, O'Gara and O'Connell could do an even better job.
Yeah.
So
for sure.
Whereas right now, it's much of a muchness who we appoint.
Yeah.
So we could bring in whoever it is, and there's other names on your list, interesting ones. You know, you're talking John Fogarty, Dan McFarland in Ulster, you know, and there's plenty more besides as well. And that's the other thing, you know, like, we haven't talked about Leo Cullen in this discussion.
Yeah.
he's a Heineken Cup winning coach.
Who, you know? Yeah, and I suppose that's the problem with, from a Leinster perspective, is that if you lose somebody like Lancaster, it's an unbelievably interesting kind of relationship there, where you've got a guy who, for all intents and purposes, oversees on-field training and oversees moves and drills, but isn't the head coach. In position anyway, he's not. That's Leo Cullen's role. And to replicate that might be difficult. Lancaster has spoken quite openly about the idea that he doesn't really want to be a head coach. But that's quite a unique position. I would be kind of hesitant about if somebody like O'Gara was open to the idea of coming home, about kind of casting him off. Like, I'm sure New Zealand would have got Schmidt home a lot earlier if possible.
You can build a life somewhere else as well. And I totally see what you're saying there. And it's not like it's a guarantee. It's just something that I would be confident about. And also, if there was a real come and get me, I would say absolutely, let's do it. But what I'm saying is, if these guys, and again, I'm putting O'Connell into that bracket as well. Mm-hmm. If these, and hearing an interview with O'Connell recently and the way he's kind of adapting to French life, I think he's 100% all in, as only Paul O'Connell can be, to this role at the moment. That would never think about anything else, at least for the time being. But these guys, if they're happy where they are, I'm saying let them off. I'm not saying reject them in any way. Yeah.
Speaking about the forwards coaches, you just touched on John Fogarty. I think we need a scrums coach, and John Fogarty is probably the standard option. He's worked with all these the Leinster props before. Mike Ross has spoken quite well about, we understand like that Fogarty had Ross in earlier this year coaching Leinster Academy props, kind of bring the truth. Like, he's got a really good broad range of his remit. I know Greg Feek has dealt with Fogarty in the past as well. I think in terms of a scrum coach, I think Fogarty is a standout option.
Good shout.
Evidence that is with Leinster.
And so important, like, we should always remember that John Hayes, a legend of Irish rugby and Munster rugby, and in no way critical of him, but from John Hayes to Mike Ross, and you're talking about it in like nearly a 12-year period where we had one guy in that position, the most technical specialist position on a rugby field. Our scrum was poor. We had nobody to replace them. They weren't even like the best of the best. To go from that to where we are now, where we have probably fourth and fifth choices that are international standard. Yeah. Never mind the fact that we've got the best in the world in Tadhg Furlong and somebody who could even challenge him for his position in the near future in Andrew Porter, you know, as a top two. We've got like lads underneath them, like Archer and Ryan and everything like that, who had, you know, Finlay Beelam even, like, you know, who are good players.
Yeah.
It's absolutely amazing what's been done, and that work can never be let go. And I think the most important thing you mentioned there is what Cullen has done, which is starting that process again. It's more important that Mike Ross is working at a lower level than he is at a senior level at the moment.
Yeah, exactly. You know? And I think that, to touch off that idea of the development of props, you can't give Greg Feek enough credit for that. Yeah. I mean, and this is, like, we've been told this openly by players, that the coaching he does within provinces, in terms of move the players and the delegation responsibility there, I think when you talk about the remit of a scrums coach, it's not 9 to 5 on a training pitch. It's the development of a position. And not only that, but the development of younger players coming through as well. And I think somebody like Fogarty has demonstrated the ability to do that.
Looks like Fogarty is the right guy. He can continue that. It's not a clean break from Feek's legacy, I suppose. Yeah. So is there anybody else there? McFarland
Just briefly on McFarland. Like, what was getting somebody back into the IRFU umbrella? I mean, I'm sure that when Dan McFarland, who I suppose his video work in Connacht was absolutely amazing, like, the players have really raved about that, to lose him to Scotland as a forwards coach wasn't part of Irish rugby's plan. That wasn't that thing. So to get him back in now with Ulster, and been kind of almost instant improvements, just in terms of, I know they've got players into key positions and things like that, but in terms of
good win at the weekend.
Yeah, and also just like areas of the game that they were really kind of lacking, like this is dependent on personnel, obviously, but still a really much stronger set piece, a much stronger line out as well. That kind of overarching idea, it seems to be kind of positive signs from there. And I think he is a guy who has now latched up experience, already international experience as a forwards coach, has worked with two different provinces now. I think he could be a real asset for Irish rugby in the over. I'm not saying Ulster finally got it right, and now you take it all away from them. But just down the line, I think Dan McFarland is somebody that you'd watch his development closely.
Yeah, I think my last point on this is that someone like McFarland did come back when the right opportunity was there, and him, it mightn't have been in the plan.
You're right,
but he did go and get that experience. And I think there's always going to be an element that we only have four teams. Mm-hmm. There's only so many jobs that are there, and eventually, I think, you know, there aren't going to be windows, there aren't going to be opportunities to open up for people, and them going and spreading their wings and finding jobs elsewhere, and us basically leading that charge in European rugby, at least, if nowhere else, is no bad thing for us, you know. And we did talk last week about, you know, is it possible that an Irish coach comes in after Farrell? And I think this is what a lot of this discussion is about, because I think as happy as we are to have Farrell, there is that problem that he comes after Joe Schmidt, and there will always be the calling of home.
Yeah.
No matter how well he does. And that's something that I would like to not be an issue with the next person in the job, you know? So that's a very interesting look. We'll keep an eye on all of those and how they're doing. And I think if other people sort of emerge as people to talk about over the course of this season, we will bring them up.
And they're definitely out there. As well, yeah. I mean, I'm absolutely fascinated by a guy like Noel McNamara, who has no playing pedigree, really. He's just been developing as a coach, and there are a few have sent out to New Zealand for 3 months and is now back looking over elite player development and things like that. Like, yeah. I think that kind of planning is... Irish rugby is getting a lot right at the minute, and that kind of stuff will only be to the betterment eventually of the Irish senior team.
Yeah. So it's a great time of year because we've just had the November internationals. We're all absolutely buzzing from things, but there's no real respite. It doesn't exactly stop now as we wait for the Six Nations, because the Heineken Champions Cup is back this weekend after just one weekend of kind of league action as we build up to it. Irish teams, as we mentioned already, 4 wins for 4, really, really good weekend. You know, we're kind of used to it at this stage, but it shouldn't be sneezed at either. But the three teams that Ulster, Leinster and Munster are playing in the Heineken Cup at the weekend, not exactly in the best of form, which people will be interested in. If you start with Ulster, who take on the Scarlets in Belfast on Friday night, Scarlets well beaten by Glasgow at the weekend, which would have been a surprise. They're kind of knocking around, you know, with the divisions, it's hard to know, but they're about fifth, I think, in the Pro 14 at the moment in an overall sense. They've been the strongest Welsh team for the last couple of years, obviously beaten to Leinster in the quarterfinal of this competition last year, but they kind of need to win in Belfast.
They don't win, they're gone. I mean, it's absolutely last chance to do. And they also brought a lot of these Welsh internationals back into their team last week. So Jonathan Davies is back, Pasha was back, Wyn Jones is on the bench, Davies is back in the pack as well. So the team is at full strength. It's a real last chance to do. To be honest, I would say that as well for Ulster after what happened in Paris against Racing. So if whichever team loses this, I think can kiss European rugby goodbye, effectively, which
makes the following week and more the opposite fixture, easier for, you know, especially if the Scarlets are bringing Ulster back and, to Clonetley, then if they've already won in Belfast, they've probably killed Ulster at that stage.
That's a really fascinating group as a whole. You know, like, Racing are clearly, despite, you know, they're doing only okay in France, but they're taking European rugby 100% seriously.
Yeah.
They played at the weekend and actually lost, but they rested. I mean, there was no Zeebo, no Donegan Ryan, no Finn Russell, no Vatorama, Sarkozy, the hooker.
I was going to say, you'll say a French name at some stage. Yeah, there we go.
also didn't play. So the rest is, I mean, you know, it was a very, very, and that, going back to what we were talking about earlier, by the way, that's, again, the point. They rested half their team and they ended up losing by 5 points, whereas Leinster have a luxury in that they don't have that problem.
Especially when they're playing the Dragons, I suppose. But going on to actually just skip a Leinster for a minute and talking about Cast and Munster and Thomond Park. This is exactly, we were talking about this before we came on air. It's the same issue as what we're like, if Cast are struggling, they lost to Agen. They're, I think,
seventh
in the top 14. You know, they lose this weekend, they're going to throw in Europe, because the most important thing for them is to get up the league in France. And this is why this is such a massive game for Munster, because if they can win, which you'd expect them to win at home, and they go in and play a full strength Cast side and put them away, then you're almost getting a freebie the following week in France, and that puts you in such an amazing position in the group.
Yeah, especially, and you know, like Cast have shown in the past, just last year, the tendency to focus on French honours, and you know, French champions losing to Agen isn't that's kind of a shock result. And they tried to win ugly at the weekend. You know, I think maybe planning ahead for this week, and it didn't work.
Mm.
And that kind of leaves you in them in a really kind of perilous situation where they know that French rugby all of a sudden is a really kind of looming priority, and you can't, like, the riches that you can't drop outside the top four in the top 14. You just can't let that happen. So that all of a sudden becomes their priority. And then you're talking about going to Thomond Park where their chances are low anyway. I wonder, I think there's a massive opportunity for Munster to make a big statement this weekend in that game. It was also great to see
two teams well used to each other as well.
Yeah.
Played last season.
It was great to see, speaking of Irish broads at the weekend for Agen, Dave Ryan, the Cork prop, was turning up over there. He's seems to be doing really well. Just another one of those, like Duncan Casey, for example, who seems to have gone over and really taken to it. And that seems to be going really well for him, yeah.
Leinster then are travelling to the wreck, scene of Bloodgate.
Yeah.
9 bloody years ago, which makes me feel pretty old, I have to say. I don't think it'll be 6-5 this time. But Bat and their current form,
yeah,
a 7-all draw with a 7-all draw with Sale at the weekend, and they only scored 8 points in a defeat to Newcastle the previous game. They're not in the best of form.
No, and again, another team that welcomed back all the internationals, and it didn't seem to bet in. I mean, I don't know what that's about. The interesting thing about this game is, for me anyway, is Girvan Dempsey over Bat, and like maybe the Lancaster narrative comes a big deal in 12 months because all of a sudden Bath, you know, we don't know. They've released an open letter saying they will organise their coaching setup in the interim, and players and fans don't need to be concerned about that.
But yeah.
What is a concern right now, as well as the Girvan Dempsey effect, and what does he know about Leinster that he might be able to use for Bath? Now, that, I mean, it's not necessarily a massively unusual situation.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's still going to be interesting to see just how well-prepped Bat are for some of this Leinster backline, some of their, you know, set-piece moves, and just how that kind of plays out at the weekend.
Yeah, because the guy who had set them all up, anything that's left over, is coaching on the opposite side. So that's always an interesting thing to look at. I do think professional teams are, especially teams as advanced as Leinster, are kind of well set up to handle that and to possibly even, you know, it's a bluff, double bluff situation as well, you know, because you can look like, you know, he'd never expect you to play in a certain way and maybe you go and do that. So, yeah, no, it wouldn't be something that would worry me, but would interest me. Bath, just for people's understanding, 6th in the Premiership, very similar situation to Leicester, actually, really struggling. There's a big bunch in the Premiership,
fight,
as you mentioned,
yeah,
between 6th and 12th, and Bath are there. So they're nearer the bottom than the top in terms of points. As I said, they drew 7-all with Sale. They lost to Newcastle. They've lost to Newcastle twice in the last few weeks, and they're bottom of the league.
Yeah.
So not in the greatest form. And I think if Leinster can get a win here, you know, the Christmas party in the Aviva in a couple of weeks against them might even be, you know, might be a bit of a walk in the park. So it's funny that the three Irish teams this week sets up the following week in all three. I think 3 wins this week, I think, will turn into 6 wins.
Yeah.
Any defeats, I think you're going to find it very hard to turn around. I can see 3 doubles one way or another.
And it's so often the case in, especially in European rugby, like this weekend when you're just coming to the midweek mark, that's the biggest hurdle of them all. I mean, and if you fall from it, you're effectively gone. And if you clear it, you're in a really, really promising position. And like all 3 provinces would be in a really promising position if they could get over the line this weekend.
Yeah. Can't wait for it. It's got to be really good. We will be back with you next Monday to talk about that and to talk about everything else and to go outside of Irish rugby as much as we can, as we do here on World and Union. As I said, we'll be back with you next Wednesday. Thanks very much to Morris. Thanks to Robbie for running things here so smoothly. And we'll see you next Monday. Take it easy.